Underwriting support for the Book Show podcast on WAMC.org comes from Northshire Bookstore, Manchester, Vermont, and Saratoga, New York. An independent bookstore offering books, author events, gifts for children and adults, and more. Northshire.com. And the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a master's degree in English with a concentration in literature studies and an MFA in creative writing. strose.edu/gradprograms.
Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. Novelist Lauren Oliver has made her mark in young adult literature with such books as Before I Fall, Panic, and the Delirium Trilogy. She's now making her first foray into adult fiction with Rooms, a tale of two ghosts trapped in the walls of an old house and the family whose home and lives overlap with their own. It is a story of regret, remorse, and redemption. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Lauren Oliver to this week's book show. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Was it always in the back of your mind that you wanted to write for an adult audience?
As soon as I started writing novels and novel length works, which was in my early 20s, it was in my early 20s before I actually managed to complete a whole full length thing. I was writing for adults. And when I went to graduate school at NYU in their master's program, I was also attempting to write for adults. They were poorly written novels for adults. I mean, I really hadn't learned yet the mechanisms of structure and story, which seems like a fundamental thing for a novelist to know. And it wasn't actually until I actually happened into young adult fiction kind of randomly. I was looking for a job in publishing, and I happened to get a job at a young adult imprint. And because of the variety and profundity of YA that I was reading, it was in that capacity that I really learned the mechanism of storytelling. And, you know, reading and writing have always been really intertwined for me. So it kind of pushed me into the direction of young adult fiction, which, you know, was a great thing for me because, again, I actually learned how to tell a story. But since I'd started kind of writing for adults, I knew at some point I would want to tackle that as a challenge to see whether I had actually learned what I could apply to that genre or to books for that audience.
Do you ever feel confined by writing for young adults, or if once you have that mindset that it's pretty clear going?
I don't feel confined by it, no. I mean, I think that you can, I mean, I love writing for middle grade as well. And it's just a question of having different ambitions for each project. Mm. I mean, I don't have a deep and burning desire to, in every book, show sex on the page. So, I mean, that's like the only thing that in terms of topics would be essentially off limits for YA. Although, again, even that can probably be treated and handled in a way that makes it appropriate for that audience. I think that one's aims are just different when one is writing for children or teens or adults. And the themes that you're looking to explore may be different. But I never feel kind of caged in. I mean, if I felt confined by writing for that audience, I just wouldn't write for that audience.
So when it comes to writing for adults, what were the challenges that you thought there would be and the challenges that there actually were?
Well, I mean, you know, the challenges, the novel itself was incredibly challenging. But again, it's funny because I of course, get the question of how, you know, what are the differences when you're writing for teen and adult? And to be honest, it's really hard to kind of codify that because each novel that you write is very different. And I tend to also write novels in a variety of different genres and categories. So I've written fantasy and science fiction and, you know, realistic fiction. So each novel comes to me with its own particular challenges. And they don't seem to be necessarily related to the audience. That said, Rooms itself was a very, very difficult, challenging book because ultimately there are 7 different narrators. You know, 2 of them were in the first person, 5 of them were in the third person. It goes between past and present tenses. So, and it's also told through the mechanism of rooms. So instead of by being organized by chapter, it's organized by room, and you kind of move through the book as though it's a physical space. And so structurally, it was like complete nightmare. And just to even understand that many characters and to give them voices and memories and lives, to allow their lives to kind of blossom, was really logistically, again, nightmarish. It is a real, you know, the challenges, I think, really come now also, because I am I'm approaching and trying to reach a completely different audience. People who not only people who may have never heard of me, sure, but also people who, if they have heard of me, they don't necessarily, you know, the fact that I have written for young adults and children isn't necessarily a recommendation.
Right.
So this, you know, now when the book is, you know, out in the world, this is kind of where some of the real challenges begin.
Did you always know that it was going to be a ghost story?
Almost from the beginning. I mean, my original impulse was to kind of render literal the old, you know, the sentence like, oh, if these walls could talk. Mm-hmm. I mean, I wanted to give voice to a house and to almost the objects in our possession. And I couldn't really figure out a way to do that made sense until I kind of hit on the idea of a ghost who's kind of subsumed the house as our body. I was really interested too in the idea of, you know, everyone's heard of phantom leg syndrome. So like, what would happen if you lost your whole body? Would you be able to almost imagine your body in physical space, which is what the ghost ends up doing? And then the house kind of becomes their body in a way. So it was kind of almost from the beginning, although originally, again, the idea came more from the idea of giving voice to the walls themselves.
As you said, the way that the book is laid out is through these rooms. So much like chapters, did you feel that there was the confines of one particular room and some safety there before you move on to the next room?
Yeah, that was really difficult. It was a really difficult structure because, of course, first of all, it really confines the action.
Right.
I mean, the most challenging thing about this book is the fact that every single piece of action has to take place in the house. And that really does limit the amount of what you can show dramatically. If people go to a party, if they go to pick out urns, if they go to do whatever, it's not on the page. It can only be referenced obliquely. So there was a kind of claustrophobic feel, I felt, while I was writing, which is not necessarily bad because, of course, the characters themselves feel a claustrophobia, that they are confined there, that the living residents are stuck there dealing with the, you know, detritus or detritus of what the patriarch has left. So I think it was a good thing that I felt that when I was writing, but it was really hard to kind of map out the action in a way that would make sense only within the confines of 8 physical spaces or however many rooms there are.
The patriarch being Richard Walker, and one of the things that should be noted when we talk about the confines, this is a sprawling country
yes.
house, so you
mm-hmm.
do have some space
right.
to work with.
Yeah, it's not a studio apartment in Brooklyn. It would be a shorter book.
So you have some elbow room
yeah.
to mm-hmm. move around. When it comes to that idea of writing a ghost story, I would think there are things that you want to include and be true to the genre, and mm-hmm. then yet there are conventions that you say, okay, I'm going to push those aside.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, yeah. And I see, I have always loved ghost stories or stories that feel haunted without necessarily having the presence of ghosts completely indicated. So, for example, you know, a seminal example is The Turn of the Screw,
right.
where it's more of a psychological suspense, and in the end, you know, you're not sure how much is real and how much is the imaginings of the governess. And I also love, I mean, I love We Have Always Lived in the Castle, which is not actually a ghost story, but it's about... But it kind of, again, has that kind of haunted, there are secrets overlaid, you know, this family is kind of sitting on a bunch of secrets. So I kind of wanted to give the book that feel. Some of the conventions that I kept with were having the ghosts have limited agency. You know, I've always kind of, I mean, it's kind of a joke, but I always wonder why ghosts can only do things like turn on the lights and turn on the dryer. And they seem to be, you know, profoundly interested by material appliances and not much else and have strong opinions about which radio station they want to listen to. So, but, you know, it's kind of, that was a convention that I kept and I chose to maintain that there are limits to what they can do and that they have to, you know, over the course of the novel, they managed to do slightly more influence. But basically that there are limits. And then there are other things that I really wanted to do away with. I mean, the ghosts in my novel they're not just there to haunt the living people. They are there kind of in a purgatory dealing with old squabbles and, you know, they still make bets and they have full fleshed out, almost living, live personalities. And I think, so that was one convention that I strayed from traditional ghost stories.
Lauren Oliver is our guest. Her new novel is Rooms. It is published by Echo. There is, going back to this idea of the sprawling country house, mm-hmm. one of the things I loved about the novel is that you realize and learn and explore this geography of place. There is a geography mm-hmm. of a house.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love old houses. I grew up in one. And I think, and it was built at the turn of the century, the last century. And I always, you know, and it made me always wonder about the people who lived there before and the people who would come afterwards. And it kind of did, I mean, as many old houses do, it kind of had like an illogical, labyrinthine feel in various places. And yeah, one of the things I loved about writing Rooms is that it also allowed me to conceive of the house at different phases, you know, in different eras, and the way that it got broken down and remodeled and kind of split apart. And yeah, it was a lot of fun.
And there's the time that we spend in the home. Some of the novel is just that alone time of a lingering, mm-hmm. being with the home and being with yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, again, I think I'm deeply influenced. I mean, I think one of the questions, actually the central questions that I wanted to explore, not that this became necessarily a central theme ultimately, but one of the things that motivated me to write the book was an idea of kind of how and whether we kind of become almost mapped onto the places we inhabit and how the places we inhabit and the things we love and own kind of get mapped back onto us. There's like a transference of values or energy. So that's, I mean, that the house itself is a character. I mean, that's kind of where the book originated from.
Mm. The idea of bickering ghosts is fun.
Yeah, it is fun. Sandra's a bickerer. Yeah.
to have yeah. that idea
yeah.
Of, okay, you may want to do what you want to do, but this is what I want to do.
Yeah, and also, I mean, that it was so fun. I mean, again, a challenge, but really fun for me to write characters that had been raised in such different eras with such profoundly different moral codes and ways of behaving. You know, Alice is born in the late teens, let's say, and Sandra, who's born in the 50s and kind of comes of age in New York in the 70s, part of a very kind of freewheeling crew, and then to have them stuck together when they've been raised in completely different times and completely different eras. I mean, I think that's kind of the idea that it is a funny and fun idea. It's the idea that ghosts don't necessarily, that they're not just, they don't, you know, their personalities don't go away when they die, and so they're forced to witness, watch things that may be incredibly abhorrent to their kind of moral schema, or, you know, that was an idea that I really had fun playing with.
And it seems as though, and this goes back to some of the conventions of the ghost story, but it seems that often ghosts are portrayed as trying to cause trouble, too.
Yeah, they're malevolent, and they're kind of personalityless.
And the ghosts here are just trying to find some normalcy.
They're trying to find normalcy, and ultimately, you know, like the living characters, they're trying to find normalcy, and they're trying to ultimately kind of escape the burdens of their past. I mean, the living characters and the ghosts kind of have similar needs. They just express, all of the characters express those needs in very different ways.
What were the ideas that you said to yourself, going back to an earlier question, in your experience of writing young adult novels that you said, okay, this is really, were there moments where you said, okay, this is really where I can do what I wanted to do in writing an adult novel?
I mean, you know, when you're writing a novel, I've always found this really pretentious when people say it, but it happens to be true. when you're writing a novel, to a large degree, you know, your characters really dictate what you write and what you're able to write. So again, I've never necessarily felt constrained. I've never felt constrained when I'm writing YA because the characters themselves are leading me towards certain places, and anything else that I wanted to kind of stick in there would be extraneous. But I mean, I was very aware at a point where I was talking about masturbation, that this was definitely an adult novel. I mean, masturbation, sex on the page, and also sex that's not sex that is the way that real sex can be, which is, you know, occasionally alienating, ungratifying, not intimate. You know, those things showing a kind of more bleak reality around some intimate relations, I think, and also just the mechanical, physical reality of sex, of masturbation, things like that are things that I knew when I was writing them. I was like, okay, this is definitely an adult novel.
With Rooms, and as you mentioned, looking for that and looking for that new audience and finding that new mm-hmm. audience. The fact is when in writing YA, you have developed this incredible fan base.
Mm-hmm.
That must be very rewarding and comforting as a writer.
It is. It's incredibly gratifying and very, as you say, comforting. And yet you also feel this tremendous responsibility to my audience, you know, to not disappoint them, to both be able to, I mean, it's a balancing act. You have to write what you want to write. And at the same time, you know, I have this incredibly loyal group. And actually, it was very sweet at yesterday's launch event. I had girls who were coming to tell me, you know, they'd started reading my first book when it was published 4 years ago when they were sophomores in high school. And now they're in college and they think they should be reading more adult books. So they're buying Rooms. And they've literally grown with every release. And been reading with every release as they kind of, so I've kind of aged with them. But yes, no, it's an amazing, amazing thing. And also I am really grateful for the fact that my fans so far seem generally to tolerate and even embrace the fact that none of my books have really been, no two books have been even vaguely, you know, the same genres and themes and they've kind of embraced that variety.
Did you like the idea of a trilogy?
I did at the time. I liked the idea of the trilogy. I'd never done it. I'd never written a trilogy. And I'm proud ultimately in the way that I did the trilogy because each book, even within the trilogy, is very different. There are different points of views and different, you know, structural uses of time. It's really, I get very bored if I have to write the same book more than once. I always joke about writing a trilogy. I'm like, it was a great thing. God help me, I'll never do it again. Although that's a lie because I have a middle grade trilogy coming out next year. But I did learn a lot from it. I mean, the middle grade trilogy I have coming out, I wrote all three books before the first ones will be out so that I could make sure that the work as a whole was exactly what I wanted it to be.
How hard is that to do, to make sure that it is exactly what you want it to be?
It's not hard if you're writing all the books, you know, before publishing them. It is very hard to do once a book is already out and you're constrained by choices that you made, you know, several years earlier. Then that is difficult. So, but you know, that's the thing. I mean, I started publishing when I was 26 and I was lucky to do that. And you make mistakes and you learn and you happen to learn your mistakes happen to be published and available for purchase, but you know, I mean, I think the worst thing for a writer would be to do. I always say this when my friends, you know, agonize over things they've written or wish they'd written better, and I say the worst thing would be to write one book that is your best book when it's your first book, or to write a book so phenomenally successful that afterwards you're paralyzed and can't write again, because writers want to write, you know?
I always love asking this question, but I mean, do you feel that there's a progression? So when you look at some of the writing in rooms, do you feel that it's some of your finest work?
I do think that there's a progression. In some ways, it's hard to compare rooms to my other, just because, again, language and the use of language and voice are so different in YA and adult. I do think that there's a progression. I think the progression actually, though, is marked more by my interest in structural stuff and being able to tackle projects that are more structurally complex than I would have been able to several years ago. And that's true increasingly for, even as I do middle grade, even as I do teen, my teen stuff is getting more structurally complex. My middle grade is. So I think that that's kind of the way in which I see myself developing.
So you already answered a question that I was going to ask, which is, so do you keep on writing adult novels, or do you go back to write middle grade and YA? So you've already been writing.
Yes, I'm doing all of the above. So I write a lot. And I just do. It's really, I always say it's like my only hobby / passion / job. So, I mean, writing and reading are basically, you know, they're just the twin axes of my life. So I have a YA book coming out in the spring. I have a middle grade trilogy that launches next fall. And I'm also working on a new adult book. So I hope very much I will be able to keep doing all of the above. Everyone jokes I should write a picture book next. maybe a screenplay. But, you know, for me, I love the ability and the challenges attendant in doing all three, in writing for all three audiences.
Is there, you look at somebody like Meg Wolitzer, who sort of goes in all of those genres. Is there somebody that you look to, whose career you look to and say, okay, well, that's a great niche that they've carved out for themselves?
Well, I love, Meg is great. And I know her actually. We're doing an event together in Brooklyn on October 5th. And I certainly admire her. I mean, my career aspirations, I mean, people I look at that have made basically just lifelong careers, in some ways it's a difficult question. I don't necessarily look at authors who've been able to do all three. I mean, I have obviously a tremendous amount of quantity of authors that I admire, and I admire their careers. I admire Ian McEwan's career. I admire Stephen King's career. I admire, you know, there are tons of people who publish who I just think they've managed to do consistently publish great, imaginative, different books. And even if it's in the same genre for adults or whatever, but, you know, very kinds of, they are clearly in love with what they do still, and they are clearly writing different kinds of books and tackling the questions they want to tackle within those books over the course of 20, 30 years. So, I mean, I, again, really admire Stephen King's career, really admire Ian McEwan's career. But yeah, the genre hopping itself, there aren't actually that many people who go both ways, who go all three ways. But hopefully that will change. I mean, I think that's also partly because there's still stigma attached to writing for YA and children less so, but a little bit. So, you know, hopefully those boundaries will become more fluid.
You walk into a bookstore and the YA, which used to be confined to the sides and the back, is now front and center. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is what sells.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a huge part of the market. I mean, to talk about YA anymore as just a whole category is like talking about all adult fiction.
Right.
I mean, which is why I hate it when people contrast that, the idea that YA can't be literary and that adult fiction is. I mean, because obviously there are plenty of adult books that are terrible and plenty that aren't. And similarly, there are plenty of YA books that are absolute schlock and there are plenty that aren't. So, I mean, but that's also only recently changed, and just like any other change. I mean, not recently changed. It's just that it's still only been 5, 6, 8 years, let's say, when the category has exploded to such an extent that now there are so many subcategories and subgenres and so many people writing for it. So, you know, it takes us a long time to kind of catch up with changes in the literary landscape. So at some point, hopefully, again, the boundaries, it won't be so much a question of audience as it will be, you know, just about the material itself and the quality of the material itself.
Warren Oliver's new book is Rooms. It is published by Echo. Warren Oliver, thank you very much for spending time with us. What a great pleasure to have you here. Best of luck to you. Thank you.
Thank you.
We enjoy hearing from our listeners about the show. You can email us at book@wamc.org. You can listen again to this or find past book shows at wamc.org. Sarah LeDuc produces our program. The show is recorded at Argo Studios in New York City. Bookmark us for next week, and thanks for listening for The Book Show. I'm Joe Donahue.